Hi, welcome to the Wellness Doctors Podcast with Dr. Lorena
and Dr. Vanessa.
We are both medical doctors who talk about how to optimize health and well-being so that you can be empowered to make better healthy choices, enrich the lives of people around you, and join us in the evolution of healthcare. Hello, everyone.
Hi, it's Vanessa and Lorena.
Good to see you all again. So today we have a really special guest. His name is Dino Hira. And Dino is a meditation coach, a hypnotherapist, a Reiki master, an author, and also a reality TV star of Married at First Sight.
Australia season six,
yeah. So we're really excited because we have a celebrity on our show. And he's also a very talented author. And he has written a book called A Miner Who Wins Inner Peace. He's also the founder of the Modern Yogi Co., which is a health and wellness online store. And so we invited him on our show today because I really had the pleasure of meeting him last year and an astrology class, interestingly enough. So that's the woo-woo side of my passion and interest. But when I met Dino, I didn't realize, but he was also teaching meditation in this space. So what we wanted to talk to him today about is how to deal with quarantine. But let's first get him to say hi.
Hello, namaste to you both. How are you going?
We're good. We've got great. A couple of lap dogs. We're hanging out, doing a girly afternoon on a Saturday. So yeah.
That is beautiful. And hello to all the listeners, and thank you for tuning in. And also a big thank you to Ananta Wellbeing, especially two doctors. You know, it's really unique that two doctors are coming together to create a space for wellness and lifestyle, to increase that lifestyle and to create a positive atmosphere for people to share their stories. So I find it really unique. So thank you so much for creating this podcast. It's amazing. It's amazing. Gratitude.
So, well, Dino, I know you've just gone to Australia in the times of COVID, so you had to do your quarantine there, correct?
That is correct, for 14 days.
Yeah. So tell us about your experience and, you know, also how, what you found challenging and, you know, how did you prepare for it going in and what sort of tips, you know, you can give our audience because people are having to do these quarantine for the foreseeable future.
Yes. So there are quite a few things I did before going into quarantine because I knew I was going to go into quarantine. It wasn't going to be a surprise and you knew it's coming. So the person in me is just really great at organizing things. So my organization ability came in good practice right here. So coming from, say, your nutrition, like what are you going to eat during the day? I know you get served three meals. But what are you going to eat in between? Because I'm used to having six meals a day, like when I'm training. But I know going into quarantine, I'd have to cut back on that because you're not going to have much movement. But there is still space for that movement, too. So coming from nutrition, I took a lot of almonds with me. I took a lot of protein bars. And then also with exercise equipment, because let's face it, you're not going to lift chairs and beds all the time. You've got to have some exercise gear.
Slip the bed like a car tire.
Yeah. Oh, I wish I could carry that. But yeah. My suitcases came in handy at some stage. But so I brought resistance bands with me and just tried to bring, you know, whatever I could to actually practice movement in that space because it's a very confined space. And let's face it, I'm mainly an introvert. So an introvert finds it really easy to spend time with themselves as well. But coming from the extroverts as well, it can be quite challenging because they're used to having people around them all the time. So being an introvert, it was quite easy for me, to be honest, because I had quite a set routine going into quarantine. I'd wake up at 4:30 in the morning, meditate first thing in the morning as well. So I tried keeping that up in quarantine as well. Nothing changed. It was just consistency throughout. So I just say having a routine, having preparation before you go into quarantine can really make it seem really easy. Like, it doesn't have to be really difficult. It makes it seem more streamlined rather than difficult or anything like that. So I find like keeping up with the meditations, keeping up with breath work, and also keeping in touch with your loved ones as well throughout the day. And they really help because, the video calls are so beautiful. They're amazing. They're very meaningful as well because they add life to your day, really, because you can't be talking to yourself all the time. You have to talk to others as well. So, it made it really, really worthwhile. As long as you go in there with like a plan and some preparation, then it makes it a lot easier for you.
So going back to one of your experiences and how you came across to develop this strength, being on a reality TV show would be full of drama and full of people, and you described yourself as an introvert. So when you have all
Yes.
these people around, and so by the way, the show is basically that you are put together with another person that you've never met before. And you have to basically spend time with them, and this is all on TV. And so there are various couples as well. I've never watched it, so I don't know how many there are. But
Unless you want anxiety and all that to come follow with
well,
it.
basically, it's a reality TV show, and people see reality TV shows because they want to live drama, but kind of in like by proxy, right? So it sort of adds a lot of excitement to their lives without having to do these things for themselves. So it's a very artificial setting. You're paired with someone you don't know. There's a camera in your face the whole time. So yeah, how did you deal with it?
I just went back to what my values are, what I stand for as well. And reality TV, the whole experience, especially being an introvert, can completely change your entire perspective of life and its own. But I feel like going into reality TV, I knew what I stood for, I knew my values, and I knew how meditation even made a big difference in my life. So I know that going into reality TV, it may be easy to be swayed from one point to the other with people's opinions, people's judgment as well. But I never let it get to me because I always knew that whatever the edit was, I knew who I was and what I stand for. And so not having that swaying action means that you are strong in your purpose. So I find meditation really helped me build that resilience to caring what people would think. It actually made me more belong to wherever I go. It's not trying to fit into any sort of category, but it's actually belonging. So there's a big difference between these two because when you're trying to fit in, you're trying to go with the public image, you're trying to maybe change parts of yourself, which is really constricting. Like it's really confined. So it doesn't really show your true self. So I find just be yourself, belong to yourself, and then your environment changes in itself as well. So going into reality TV, I didn't know what to expect. I was like, oh, it didn't know. I was visualizing, yeah, okay, getting married because 10,000 people apply for this show, and it's 10,000 people across Australia, and it's a pretty crazy show. It's like, a million views per episode on average. So, and it's really interesting thing is when I was in quarantine in the UK, I mean in Hong Kong, in Perth, Australia, they were playing it in the UK. So they were playing this show in the UK, and so obviously I was getting a lot of people connecting with me on from the UK. So all those memories come back and all those feelings come back as well. But then now you've got that experience of, you've lived through that before, but now you can handle it in a much better way, a more constructive way. So it really brought a great experience because I had new clients now contacting me, telling me, asking me, oh, so what's meditation about? Where do I get started? What do I do? Where is this program? So that gave me an opportunity. That gave me a door that's open now to even the UK. So it's unbelievable how it's I'm in Perth, Australia, and I've got a client in the UK that I'm coaching and guiding meditation practices for. So I feel it's a blessing, really, like to be on reality TV. I didn't get a wife out of it, but I definitely got doors open in those
Well,
areas.
just out of curiosity, I mean, having so many people in such a intense environment surely would have sparked off a few, you know, tension sparkies, fizzle bits here and there. How did you not let people get to you? Like, what was your mindset? How do you deal with a lot of these things in your that's happening around you, which you don't have very much control over?
Yeah, that's a really great question, because in Married at First Sight, we've got these I guess like these scenes called the dinner parties. So the dinner parties is basically where all the couples meet, and they all it's a very chaotic scene. You get people shouting, you get people screaming, people confronting each other. So it can be quite dynamic that and hostile, that whole environment. So how I dealt with it is going into that space, knowing that the Zen you find at the top of the mountain is a Zen you bring with you. So at the same time, you're coming into a hostile environment. The Zen is all within us. It's not anything outside. And when you can tap into that Zen ability within you, it doesn't matter if you're in chaos or if you're in a big tsunami, you're still known to stay calm. And this is how meditation has helped me. My breath work has helped me. So I'm really conscious with how I breathe. When people are confronting me or people are trying to get a reaction, I'm just focused on how I'm breathing. And it's a very powerful act. If you can stay calm in that situation, not many can, because when someone's insulting you or screaming at you, first thing you would do is just flip the table or punch them. But in my mind, I knew that. But in my mind, I knew that it's not something to do with the mind. It's just something to do with your breathing. Because if you're living in the mind a lot, then you can react to so many different people. You get frustrated easily. But the real secret is to live from the heart, live from your gut feeling, and know that breathing is something you can control. It's not anyone else who's breathing for you. You're in control of that breathing or that pace of breathing. So when you can breathe, you know, people, when they're in frustration, they breathe and then they sigh. How good does that sigh feel? But when you can consciously know that, you know, that sigh is made for your own calmness, then it's amazing. It's a realization right there.
Actually, it's called a physiological sigh, because there are studies around how people, when they're feeling quite anxious and stressed, they sigh, but it's almost like a double sigh. It's like, you know, like,
yes,
it kind of stutters a little bit, and then it's a long exhale. And there is science behind it that says this is how the body de-stresses.
Correct.
So it's a physiological thing. And you said correctly, we control our breathing. And when we breathe in, we are tapping into our sympathetic nervous system, so our fight or flight. And when we breathe out, it's very much our parasympathetic. So it's your rest and digest and healing part of your breath work. So every time you breathe, there's this sort of seesaw action between your sympathetic and parasympathetic. And so if you know how to hack it, you can control your nervous system. It's somewhat of a misnomer to call it an autonomic nervous system, as if it kind of has a life of its own and there's no way you can do anything about it. But actually with a vision, with breath work, you can kind of manipulate and make it work for you. So, you know, nature skills breathe in a way that makes them more sympathetic and more alert, because they need to go and, you know, complete a mission. Whereas both of us already in a busy life
or on a mission
every day at the office,
yes.
we need to calm down. And so when people talk about breath work, sometimes I, you know, tell patients about it and you kind of get this glaze over and they're like,
I breathe.
I know, because do you find that when you're explaining
your mouth breathing, and they're like, so
yeah,
whole another science behind nose versus mouth breathing. But the more I understand about it, the more there is science to back up what breath work is. A lot of the ancient mantras that we chant, they kind of go in the rhythm of like a 5.5 second in, 5.5 second out. So every breath you take in and out is around 5.5 seconds. So round up or round out as you wish. But this is what they found, the coherence breathing has been really helpful to calm people down and also just be more present. And when that happens, your brain starts to shift. So the part that is constantly fidgeting, monkey mind, mental time traveling, focusing on the future worries, focusing on past regrets, starts to cool down and you become more present. And the brain actually connects so much better when you're aware of yourself, both physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. So the whole art of breathing, the more I dig into it, the more I realize there's so much ancient wisdom that is now backed by science. It's fascinating.
Yeah, it is. And it's great that science is actually backing, you know, a bit of spirituality now, because in the past when I'd tell people, yeah, teach meditation, and they'd all look at me as if I'm some hippie or junkie or who's trying to con them off money and all that. But no, it's actually good that science is backing this now, and there's going to be so much more that is going to build a bridge between science and spirituality, because there's so much more that, yeah, meditation is something that existed 5,000 years ago, but now all of a sudden it's like, oh, mindfulness this, mindfulness that. But it's saying that at least now we're getting some movement in the right direction. I feel COVID's actually helped that in a way, because people are finding that meditation is something they can feel normal about now, and feel that it's actually for a good purpose, to give them that stress-free ability and that ability to just be themselves, not worry about, you know, what's going to happen tomorrow, what's going to happen, what happened yesterday, living in the past. It's just being right here, right now. And that's what meditation is, truly a gift, a phenomenon. So, yeah, even coming back to like your other question there, like with the dinner parties and the chaos, how did I deal with it? Yeah, to be honest, like even currently we're still doing interviews. Some cast members are doing interviews in the UK, bagging each other out. And I'm like, this is like so 2 years ago, and you've still got that resentment. You've still got that resentment. That's why I don't let it bother me, because I say that this is where a Buddhist philosophy really comes into play, because one time there was a time when a man, when Lord Buddha was giving his speech, and he was trying to preach about Buddhism, he had one person just be at this ceremony, and he started abusing Buddha. He started saying, like, this is rubbish. How dare you teach this? Like, this doesn't make sense. Like, what are you talking about? And so the Buddha just kept, kept his cool, his calmness, and in that moment. And then one of Buddha's followers said, "What are you doing? Like, how come you're letting him insult you like that?" And Buddha said, "You know, if someone gives you a gift and you don't accept it, who does it belong to?" So in the same way, that person was giving Buddha a gift of insult, frustration, anger. Buddha didn't accept it. So obviously it falls back on the giver, who is frustrated, angry, who hasn't created a reaction in Buddha. That's why he's getting even more frustrated. So in the same way, that's the exact same way I deal with anyone trying to insult me or judge me in any way. It doesn't bother me at all, because that's their problem. It's like their reflection of their own self in their words and in their actions. So it's a real big realization that I've come to, being in reality and seeing how people react and judge. Of course, where you live in a modern world where there is going to be judgment no matter what you do. It's if we all lived in a non-judgmental world, we'd all be Dalai Lamas, right? So we're living in judgment. So we have to persevere. We have to go along with that. But it's all about how you react. And coming back to how you're breathing is a big foundation for how you react.
Actually, you said something earlier which I resonate with, because I often tell my patients, if you put yourself in the victim mode, you will feel more stress. So, for example, it bothers me. I'm the object of the sentence, and something is done to me, and it implies that you don't really have control over the situation. But what you said was, I don't let it bother me. So I, now being the subject, means I have control and I am doing the action to something. Yeah. And that's so much more powerful. So every time you feel that my boss is stressing me out, you know, my job is killing me, you know, anything like that, just turn it around and say, I am letting it do it to me, so I can choose not to let it do it to me.
Yeah.
And you can choose your reaction. I know that reaction is very much almost like a reflex, because your limbic system fires up, you're constantly like, you know, putting out fires or reacting to stress. And when that happens, your prefrontal cortex actually shuts down. So your logical mind actually goes quiet, goes offline. Because if you need to logically think about something, it actually takes too long. And the saber-toothed tiger will kill you, right?
Yes.
Metaphorically speaking. So the body is designed to not think when you're in extreme, intense emotions like rage, right? Mm. That's why it's, people say, I see red and I just reacted. Because you've shut off your prefrontal thinking executive functioning cortex.
Mm.
That's true.
Yeah, when you do have those intense moments, learning meditation, I mean, yeah, you're not meditating at that moment, but it's a practice done day in, day out, which has strengthened that part of your cortex so that you're not completely just going offline and letting the body react like in a more animalistic way.
Yeah.
And you can choose your reaction. And if you choose no reaction, it is still your choice.
Yeah.
That's correct.
And from behavioral, you know, psychology, if the person doesn't get anything out of you, that actually that behavior extinguishes itself.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely right. And yeah, I mean, coming back to how I dealt with quarantine as well, there is obviously this show has been going on in the UK. So it was this thing called Cameo, where they all the following or fans hit you up and they say, oh, can you wish this person happy birthday? Can you wish this one really well? So that's one of the things that really kept me occupied. I was getting quite a few requests, but it felt so good to connect with your following, your audience, and actually know who they are and actually you know, be part of a celebration. I feel it gives you good emotions, great emotions to overcome, you know, the sad times or the times where you feel like quarantine is boring, because there's so much else to do as well. One of the other things I did was train myself in a skill called past life regression. Now, past life regression is something that's been known in Ayurvedic lifestyle, in Buddhism as well, in terms of reincarnation and karma, and in Hinduism in a big way. So I found that past life regression, being able to guide people through past lives, is an eye awakening experience. It's something that I feel science will eventually catch on to, because as you probably know, it's just going into meditation now. So soon it'll be past life regression, because that's the deeper level of meditation. It's a deeper level of hypnosis and going into, you know, why people are feeling very traumatic or why they are fearful of certain things. Why do they keep attracting the same type of people in their lives? So In that case, I did a few sessions there while I was in quarantine, and that kept me really busy. It was really great to actually guide people to overcome their fears. And it's I call it like hide and seek. So, you know, when you play the game hide and seek, when you find the person, the game's over, right? So it's the same thing with your fear and past life regression. If you can identify where this fear is coming from, the root cause of that fear, and just sit with it for a while, and there's a blockage removal process we go through, that itself dissolves that fear. If you can find it, where it's coming from, you've seeked it. So that's done. So,
okay. I am super curious about this, and I don't know very much. So let's rewind to past life experience 101. So what do you mean by past life? What is this concept in Ayurvedic?
You know, the whole concept is that we have lived many lives. We have lived, our soul is eternal, but it is our body and the mind that is in this lifetime. But the body doesn't travel with us. The lifetime, the mind doesn't travel with us. It's only the soul that is eternal. So it's your connection to your soul. What is your purpose in this life? Are you actually doing what you're meant to be doing? Or are you just going with what society wants you to be doing? So that's a really awakening experience as well. You know, like say if you put a shark in a fish tank, it's only going to grow a certain amount of time. But then if you put a shark in the ocean, oh, it's just going to grow like crazy and probably find what it's really meant to be doing. So it's actually adjusting the environment to suit your skill or your gift in this world. So past life regression actually helps you to go through what you were meant to be doing in a previous life, which you could not fulfill before your death came. And then now you can actually do it in this life. So if you were meant to, say, help people in your previous life, if you're meant to help people in a certain way, maybe serve in an ashram, and you couldn't do that, that was one of your desires, in this life, you can actually look at doing that now. And that's a real opening experience that it shows that you can link two and two together. And in terms of fear, like for example, I had a client that was very fearful of plane crashes. Okay, for some reason, she was very fearful of plane crashes. She had a son who wanted to be a pilot, and she told went against him and said, "No, you can't do it because I have fear of plane crashes. I don't think it'll be that good. I think it'll be a really risky job." So through past life regression, we found out that in her previous life, she was Air Force pilot. One of the first females as an Air Force pilot in that country she was living in, and her death actually happened through a plane crash. And there she realized, wow, okay, that's why I've been inflicting that fear on my son, whereas he could have been an amazing pilot, and I could have realized this way before. So that's just one example, one simple example of how past life can make a difference. So it eliminates fear, goes through emotional burdens that you can sort of identify and then look to overcome. And then also it helps to release certain traumas from previous lives.
So how many cycles will it take for us to fulfill our destiny?
Come to a past life session with me and find out.
Okay, so what is a session like?
Well, a session, firstly, if the mind is not relaxed, it will not work. So we focus mainly on the relaxation. The first part of past life regression is we're focusing on the breathing, inhaling, exhaling at a certain count, certain pace, and then focusing on a whole full body scan. So a body scan with your mind, making sure each body part is relaxed, and then taking the patient through a trance. So locking them in a trance. And when you're in a trance, your brain is actually in a theta state. So it is in a state that is very receptive to your words, receptive to creativity, and also receptive to knowing that you are beyond the body and beyond the mind. So it's a very, really identical, really gifted state to be in. A theta state. So that's the process. So once the patient's in the theta state, I walk them through basically like a guided sort of meditation in a way, and then lead them towards different lives. So there are certain deepeners we use, certain aspects that we describe. So say you're going into a door, the door behind the door can be like one of your past lives. So it's a very skilled technique to go through that. And the pace of voice changes, the words you use are very hypnotic as well. But mainly there has to be some trust developed between you both before you go into a trance and do that. But there's a lot of things out there that say, past life regression can be dangerous. It's going to be really risky. That's only if you have an unskilled person doing it, then it can be risky, of course. But if you have someone who knows what they're doing and you can establish that trust, then you are going to find a lot of insight and very meaningful stuff.
Yeah, so the theta waves you mentioned is interesting because it's not exactly a sleep state, but it's also not an alert state. It's sort of halfway in between. And generally,
Correct.
it's seen in connection with things like creativity, intuition, daydreaming, and fantasizing. And it's kind of like a repository for memories and emotions and sensations. So they're really strong when you're focusing internally or during meditation or prayer and spiritual awareness. So I think that's the state that would help people connect a bit deeper emotionally. And I mean, I call it mental doodling. You know, people kind of need to go and daydream and doodle because that's where people find creativity. You know, you're
That's right.
not confined by the extremes of society and the rule books and what you should do and all the judgment that comes with it. And you're just allowed to be free. And you know, the classic example is who was it? Is it Einstein or someone, you know, who would fall asleep but with a metal ball in his hand. And then when the metal ball drops and hits the plate, it wakes him up, and he would write down the thought that he had at that moment to help him
create
solutions. But
I do think it's Einstein.
Let me
see
this and make sure it is Einstein. Or yeah, it's someone else.
I'm not sure who it is, but wiki that one.
Yeah.
But one of the famous scientists. I'm very interested in that process because I think also as part of doing it, I think you were also saying that you needed a certain kind of skill and professionalism. So there are certain things that there's all certain kinds of people who you may feel that it's not suitable for life regression. So So then who would those types of people be?
Those type of people, I'd say if you have a precondition of, say, mental health, depression, anxiety, then if you get anxious quite a lot, then it just depends on how receptive you are to the breath work. So if you have, if you're okay with overcoming that part of being anxious, then it's fine. Mm-hmm. It's okay. I think it's mainly for people who have who are pregnant as well. I wouldn't recommend past life regression because there are certain things, certain practices in there that may not be suitable to the women who are pregnant. But apart from that, it just depends on the actual client. If the patient's okay, if they're 100% fine to go through with it, then it's fine. And it also comes down to the guidance you're given. So if you're not doing enough breath work to someone who's feeling anxious, then it's not going to go well. So I think with a more anxious person, I'd spend more time doing breath work and doing breath work that relates to them rather than taking them straight through past life regression. They're just going to feel more traumatic, to be honest. But we're here to actually heal trauma, not put them through more trauma. So it depends if the client's okay and receptive to the breath work, it can really calm them down. And it's actually when I get clients wake up from past life regression, they feel more alert. They feel more awake. They feel well rested, but actually more awake. So, and it's their mind is more clear. It's a lot more clarity given to them.
I'm just putting my medical hat on. So I was just wondering, if someone is not well with regards to their mental health. So for example, severe mental illness like schizophrenia or very twitchy bipolar people. When I say twitchy, it means like they kind of flip between mania and depression a lot. People with unresolved PTSD or, still actively experiencing a lot of PTSD symptoms or people who are quite suggestible. I don't know if I think client selection is very important.
I
think we just want to maybe say, if you fall under any of those categories, then speak to a
health professional
first.
Yeah. Medical advice as well, because then I probably wouldn't recommend past life regression to those sort of categories, because it can actually trigger it even more. Because when people go through trauma, when they go through trauma in their previous life, and they come across a scene where they don't really want to see that from a previous life, that can trigger more depression, that can trigger more anxiety. So it's not probably recommendable unless, of course, a medical professional says, okay, yep, go try it, then that's fine. But this is all spirituality-based. It's not something to do with science. It's mainly all spiritual-based with past life regression. It's coming to your creativity, coming to your core self. But of course, with a person's health, it comes through medical practices. And we go through screening as well. Like before I take on a client, I actually go through a questionnaire and screen them as well and make sure that there's no pre-medical condition. So we go through that and make sure that the client is ready to go through past life.
You mentioned something really interesting, because going back to coming in conflict with people and dealing with talking to people under that stressful situation, it takes skill. So it's a skill that we can all build, because even though we are wired to react, if there is an awareness and a practice that we are doing on a regular basis, it's definitely a way of not just us talking, but also receiving some of that communication as well. So in coaching, for example, sometimes you come across clients who may be angry or irritable or upset, but at the same time, you want to acknowledge that they have these emotions that are going through, because acknowledging those emotions actually helps to build connection and trust between the person and yourself. And so I find that sometimes, when that situation happens, you can't really go forward unless you address that. So I think it's very valuable for all of us to know how to go about this practice, because it's not something that we automatically know, but it's a skill that we can learn. And so for you, I know also we've talked about this in conversations before, that you had done meditation since you were a child. So tell us, like, what was that like, and did you do it all throughout your adulthood, or like,
and how can we get more kids to do it?
Yeah.
I think this should be introduced in schools, especially. And I had a great opportunity to teach it in high schools, but I'll get to that anyway. But yeah, coming back to my own childhood, I was born and raised in Hong Kong. So Hong Kong being a very busy city, very chaotic. Even in primary school, I remember people just didn't know how to sit and be quiet. People would just run around and it's still the same. But thanks to my parents, my loving parents, who put me through meditation classes, which happened at least once a week, every Friday. So around 5 p.m., we'd go there and we'd actually meditate. And I was 8 years old, and kids in the same age group as well. So I found that practice itself really created a seed within me that calmness, or that ability to stay calm, will grow. But as I was a teenager progressing, 13 years old, I didn't think meditation was cool anymore, and the cool kids weren't doing it. So of course I didn't build any resilience, you know, to be myself. It was just like what the society wanted, what school wanted, and what the popular kids should be doing is what I was doing. So which is completely unawakened way to live. So I lost touch with meditation, and then I thought, but it really came back in my life when I was going through depression in 2014. And I found that if it wasn't for meditation, I probably would be on medication, or I don't know where I'd be, really. So to be honest, I think meditation really saved my life in a way. It brought meaning to my life. It brought me to who I really am. It brought me to my purpose. And so when I started meditating, I didn't know what or how, and because I lost touch with it for so long. But I think when you just sit and know that your own inner self has that ability to sit with who you are and sit with yourself, and relate to what's going on within, because meditation is an inward journey, nothing to do with the outside world. So being inwards, you know, you have to be comfortable with going through your emotions, going through how your heart space is. How is the love tank in your heart space? Do you have enough love to give? So you have to ask those questions to yourself. So when you go inwards, it's a completely different journey to, you know, what you see in the outside world. So having that meditation background, then going into reality TV was really a gift. I was then, and even in my professional work as a mining engineer in the mines in Western Australia in Perth, I found that meditation really kept me sane, because a lot of people would try and get into alcohol or survive on that to take their mind off work. And to be honest, they were actually digging a bigger hole. I'm not saying drinking or alcohol is bad for you, but you know, to a certain extent, if you can control
anything, too much of anything's bad for you, except meditation.
But as they say, everything in moderation. So, but I was seeing people, my own work colleagues, piling on mountains of food and then going to the wet mess to drink alcohol, like beer after beer after beer. And you're like, when does it stop? And you can find that now I realize that it's actually a temporary bandage, because people were so frustrated in their actual job that they wanted an escape. They wanted to get out of there and just escape. So alcohol was their escape. Overeating was their escape. and not knowing when to actually stop is completely a mistake as well. So it's knowing that how meditation can help you, if it's actually a routine, if it's actually part of your lifestyle, you know when to say no, you know when to stop and actually be yourself, not going with the society or the times. So yeah, so I really thank how meditation has made a huge difference. And if it wasn't for meditation, I probably wouldn't have been on Married at First Sight, because they made me this whole character of some spiritual guru that's centered in maths. And and to be honest, that's actually a blessing in a way, because it's made me to a lot of people now, and I'm teaching meditation to people from across the world, which is beautiful online. And yeah, being in this space as well, talking to doctors, I probably wouldn't have been here if it wasn't for meditation. So really, I have to thank this amazing phenomenon. And I think more people should do it. I had the great opportunity to teach at a high school in Hong Kong last year, and before COVID, obviously, it is. But this was actually while COVID was going on. We did online program. So I did an 8-week mindfulness meditation program at one of the ESF schools, and it went so well. It was for year 13 high school students. I had students from the UK who were stuck in lockdown over there, logging into the meditation program. And this was, 2 a.m., 3 a.m. in their time. But it shows you what an effect it had on that kid, being in high school, because knowing that you're going to go into the real world in the next year had a profound, meaningful effect on him, especially on how to deal with stress, how to deal with what was going on with COVID. It's a complete lifestyle change. It's a change in your mental health. So meditation is really how effective it was, and in a positive way for them to deal with stress and to deal with all the problems that arise, because problems will only be problems depending on our reaction to them. So you can make problems even a gift. It's all perspective.
So now that we have a spiritual guru on our podcast, I would like to ask this question. Whenever I suggest meditation to patients, I usually get one or two responses. It's either, yeah, I've tried it before, I could try it again, or I'm open to it, or nah, doesn't work for me, can't do it, it's impossible, tried it, not my thing.
Yeah.
So I'm sure if you tell people that you're a meditation teacher, sometimes you get those responses.
Yeah.
So what is your way of helping people understand a little bit more about meditation, or trying to get them to try some
Yeah.
form of meditation?
Okay, yeah, usually I do get people saying, I can't sit in one spot. I can't sit in one spot because I get too many thoughts in my mind. But then I turn around and ask them, are you doing the right type of meditation? Because meditation is not just sitting there with your eyes closed, pretending you're in
Legs
the
crossed.
Himalayas and in orange robes. But if you want to do that, that's perfect. If it works for you, great. But what is it about meditation that works for you? So meditation is very vast. There's chanting mantras is a meditation. Walking is a meditation. Walking in nature is a meditation itself. And also playing music is a meditation. Writing is also meditating. So even talking. So there's so many aspects to meditation, but what is it that makes meditation meditation? It is just being in that present moment, taking your mind away from your stress, your family, your friends, your problems, your issues, all that. It's just time for yourself. It's me time. And that is exactly what meditation is. It's as long as you can be in that present moment. You see, if you're walking in nature, you want to know what sort of birds, how are the birds chirping? How are they singing? Are they calling out your name? Or are they, so being in tune with nature is a beautiful feeling. So knowing that, what are the sounds you can hear? What are the colors of the flowers you're coming across? And how does it feel when your bare feet are touching nature? If you're touching grass or earth or Mother Earth, it feels like a beautiful practice. And that itself is meditation. So it's just taking time to be conscious of how you're breathing in that activity and how you are taking time for yourself. Like I find even exercising at, let's say, 6 in the morning, no, 5 in the morning, it makes me realize that it allows me to just vent that built up you know, anger or frustration or anything just takes it away, because even lifting weights is like a type of meditation, because you're in the zone, you're just in that present moment, you're just worried about that rep, not worried about, you know, what's going to happen 2 hours time, what's going to happen, what happened yesterday. You're just worried about pumping that iron, lifting that that rep, that weight at that time. So that's a beautiful practice, because you're being in the zone, you're being in that mindset, in that present moment. So that helps you build your ability to meditate. So yeah, if you get clients asking you, I can't meditate, I've tried it, I've done this and that, and yeah, tell them, okay, are you doing the right type of meditation? Yeah, and this is where Ayurveda comes in as well, because Ayurveda has different doshas, different types of people as well. So sometimes, you know, the people who can't sit still, they would be good for walking in nature. So they would be great for, lifestyle and all that. But those people who get very anxious, say, for instance, if they're flying on the plane and they're getting really anxious about being on the plane, they can go with mantra chanting, because mantra chanting is great for that. It's taking their mind away and you're just focusing on these words. You're focusing on mantras, which are purposeful, meaningful words to change your reality. So, you know, like we talk about affirmations now in the real world. We talk about I am, these affirmations. You are already that. You don't have to say it. But mantras are actually Ayurvedic terms that are skilled to change your reality. So if you say, for instance, you know, if someone's saying, I am love, you are essentially love anyway. Love is not an emotion. It's just essentially what you are. You're just covered in some layers that have been built up over time. But while mantras actually help you peel those layers and help you reveal your true self. So if you're in a layer of fear going on this airplane, mantra chanting can actually eliminate that fear. So by these skilled words.
So you said something really that resonates with me. If it wasn't for meditation, you'd probably be on medication and how to be doing the right type of meditation. So my analogy to patients is, well, say you have an infection and the doctor gave you a treatment, right? It'll be a specific type of antibiotics, not an antiviral, not an antifungal, not a, you know, anything else.
Yes.
And it will be a specific dose to be taken specific number of times per day for a specific number of days, right? So you can go home and take the whole bag of antibiotics and pop them all in one go, right? Yes. Nor do you take 2 days of it and stop, right? So in the same way, a lot of these types of meditation, breath work, exercise, sleep, all the things we do in lifestyle is a form of meditation. It just doesn't come in a little plastic pill or a tablet form.
Yes.
So it's really about finding the right type of medication, doing the prescribed amount, doing the right timing, the right number of days. So for meditation, you know, for example, there was a study on using Curtin Kriya for care workers for Alzheimer's patients, because they generally have a lot of care stress. So it was very specifically 12 minutes per day. I think it was twice a day or three times a day for X number of weeks. And then they measured their subjective levels of depression, anxiety, stress, but they also measured their telomeres, which is the end caps of your DNA. And it's one of the ways where people gauge cellular health. And they actually measured like an increase in length of their telomeres, meaning the cells actually grew in a healthier, more youthful way. So if you have to compare clinical studies and you want a clinical effect, you need to do the right amount of the right thing.
Yes, you do. Definitely. And that comes with everything, really, like everything in moderation, but also skilled practice. So knowing that, you know, when, you know, how much of it you need, when do you need it? And that determines how effective it will be for you. Like if I'm doing meditations at 4:30 in the morning, doesn't mean my neighbor is going to do the same. They may love the night meditation before they sleep because they have to work on sleep. And, you know, doing meditations before sleep will help them to have a really sound and peaceful sleep. So for me, it's like more of an energizer. So I get my meditation done 4:30 in the mornings when there's this period called Brahma Mutam. So it's a period where the cosmic energy is so high, so much prana, so much life energy in that time, that when one person invests in activities for the mind, like say meditation, it can be a really phenomenal effect. It can help you with your creativity. It'll help you with so many health benefits as well. But at the same time, if I had sleep problems, I'm not going to meditate at 4:30 in the morning. I have to meditate before I sleep. I have to work on my breathing before I sleep so I can actually have an effective sleep in that case. So it depends, like from person to person, but you're absolutely right in saying like it's the same thing for medication as well. You need to know how much you want to take, how much, when do you have to take it? And I remember the doctors always telling me, yep, take two before bedtime, two at dinner and whatever it was. But I used to follow them to the T because I knew that I could have that trust in doctors and, knowing that they know full well what's good for your health and what's great for your health. And that's why I find like this whole podcast is such a real big gift to not just like the community, but the world, like to know that, health starts with you and health starts with your lifestyle, not just in medication.
And I also wanted to share a bit about the different types of meditation, mm-hmm. because I was one of those people who, if you told me 5 years ago, you've got to meditate, I'd be like, no, that's just definitely a waste not of for time. Me.
Because
I've got stuff to do. I've got boxes to tick. I've got some place to be. But now I actually have actually reaped the benefits of meditation. But it actually didn't come in the kind of sense of sitting stereotype where you're sitting down and then you're wearing those robes. It didn't come that way at all. Yeah. Actually, it first came to me as a mantra. So I was using mantra meditation to help me sleep. And so when I started to get that benefit, I realized that we're all unique and we're all different. So we all have a different way that resonates best with us because of our neurobiology, because of our physiology. And I also realized that for me, fitness and movement was meditative. So even if I'm hitting or punching a bag or boxing bag, to me, that was meditative because I was really into the routine. I was into the power behind the punch. And so for me, exercising was a kind of movement meditation.
True.
And so actually I needed to do, and for me, meditating that way in the morning actually really helped me to sit still throughout the rest of the day. And after that, after hours and hours of sitting still and thinking of problems and trying to solve people's problems, I realized at the end of the day, it wasn't movement that helped me to calm my mind, but it was going into the kind of being meditation. So yes. Being with my feelings, getting back in touch with myself, because we, as health professionals, we spend a lot of time outside of ourselves solving other people's problems. Mm. But where's that me time? So at the end of the day, it was really important for me to have that me time before I could let go of other people's problems or things that were on my mind. So even if it's not one particular, it doesn't have to be one way of meditation. You could have several different ways of meditating at different times of the day. You just have to work out what works into the routine, what is the purpose of the meditation. And all of this about health and wellness for health professionals is that we all want to show up in the best self for our patients, because we know that if we're able to connect with our patients authentically and we have good focus and good problem solving skills, it actually does a lot more benefits than just helping people. It actually helps ourselves as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just wanted to share with the audience that I was definitely not one of those people who could sit still. But if you ask me now to sit still and get in touch with myself, I have such a different concept of that, because it's a way of nurturing myself. And I also have to say that with a lot of the things that's happening now, we're often looking for solutions that are outside, which is okay, because we're used to looking for help and connection with people. But it's also important to connect with ourselves to find out what is our strengths, what is the strength that we have, and to continue to do that on a regular basis. Because I remember that once you shared that you brush your teeth every day. So you're cleaning your teeth every day, but you also have to clean your mind every day.
Yes.
So, you know, human
it's
beings.
It's not dental hygiene, it's mental
it's
hygiene.
Mental hygiene.
Exactly. You gotta floss.
Yeah, exactly. And the amount of negative things that we go through on the daily basis, we've got to have more positivity and positive experiences. And whether it's actually really happening to us or whether we're thinking about that positive, it's still the brain and the body still reacts the same way. Mm-hmm. So I think it actually makes sense that if we're doing this and making it a priority for ourselves and understanding why and knowing why that's important for us, and it's different for everybody, then we're much more likely to stick with a habit that's a change.
Yeah, I tell my patients, you know, do you judge yourself when you brush your teeth twice a day? They're like, no. Why? But why the judgment around meditation, right?
Yeah.
If it's mental flossing and you do it 3 minutes twice a day and it's a non-event and you do it because you're cleaning out, you know, little bits of debris every day so that you don't end up in a crisis and end up at the dentist chair with gaping holes in your mouth and cavities and needing, you know, things done that are going to be very expensive for you. And I said, just think of meditation like you would wash your face or take a shower or brush your teeth or comb your hair or put your face cream, whatever it is, right? It's a routine. It doesn't have to be like an additional chore in that sense. And it's sometimes more your approach, belief, and perception, and the way you approach meditation.
Yeah.
And it's just that little bit of mental hiccup some people have. And it's something that we all need to find our own way of doing it. And may I share my meditation journey?
Yeah,
so both Lorena and I are activators, and we, as the name suggests, are activated. We do things. We are fixers. We are doers. And I've never really bought the whole meditation thing, but what I do actually has been meditative for me without me knowing the term.
Yeah.
So I swim a lot, and when I swim in open water, I'm just breathing left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right. Or I count 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And then suddenly a fish comes along, you know, or I have to dodge a jellyfish, or there's coral on the bottom of the ocean floor that I can see. And so I'm totally immersed, literally and figuratively, in a body of buoyancy where my mind just loosens up. And I can do that for an hour, hour 30, no problem, just counting 1, 2, 3 in my head.
Yes.
And another thing I find really meditative for me is like meditating on steroids, which is climbing, right? So with rock climbing, the only thought you have in your head is how to work the puzzle, right? How do I get up this wall and how do I not fall, please?
You have to be in the moment.
You have to be in the moment. You can't be doing shopping lists. You can't be thinking about your tax bills. There is absolutely nothing else other than, you know, there it's your body becomes so alive. And I think that for me is literally drugs. I am so much happier that I'm in tune with my body, like how my center of gravity is shifting. Can I stand up on my tippy toes? Can I reach that little crimp on with my left hand? And in my mind, it's not even words that I'm thinking. It's a sensation that I'm thinking. Like it sounds weird, but you're thinking, but not in words. And you're thinking with your bodily movements. And the only word that I use is generally a swear word when I'm struggling or when I fall. But you're tapping into so much sort of very primal, deeper sensations that is normally covered over with our logical mind and our need to do things and need to achieve thing mode.
That's true.
Yeah, so that's kind of how I meditate. And normally in the morning, if I have 10-15 minutes, I do a bit of Wim Hof breathing. And I think the reason why I'm doing it more regularly is because it's competitive. You know, like how long can I hold my breath for this morning? And I find that on good days when I've had a good night's rest, I haven't, you know, been stressed too much, I can definitely hold my breath for longer. And it's my way of tuning into my body in terms of how stressed I am today, how much can I take on, do I need to say no more often? And it's competitive, you know, like I could do it for 3 minutes, I could do it for 3 minutes 15.
Great.
So, and because of the app, you know, now I can do it in my head because I can automatically switch on the playlist.
I can hear
Wim Hof's voice, I can hear the breathing in the background, I can hear the music. So now I don't actually need the app. I could be on the bus and then it'll just play, and then I'll just time myself, and then I'll log my exercise, and I'm like, yes, done another round.
So it's like a habit. And you'd find, like, in pranayam, like the breath work, there's so many different types of breath work as well. But I find, like, even holding your breath, like, say in a, they call it tribandh. Tribandh is like a three lock hold breath. Mm-hmm. So you're locking the bottom part of your organs, then the stomach, and then also the neck. So you're like basically locking, bringing your head forward, and you're in a lock position. And if you can hold that for a moment, you can actually shift the energy from down to up your chakras or your energy centers. And when you can do that, you feel a sensation in your mind. And the more longer you can do that, you find it stems your creativity. It actually boosts your creativity. If you do that for a certain amount of time, then that really boosts your creativity. So yeah, it's a phenomenal way of going about your day and making sure that's a habit, because then you'll reap the benefits.
So it sounds like you are a man of many talents, and we are extremely glad that you're on our show. So if we ever have clients or listeners who want to find you,
yes.
What's the best way of following you or getting in touch with you?
Yeah, well, my brand, The Modern Yogi Co., the website is www.themodernyogi.co. And I'm on Instagram as well, Dino_Hira, or The Modern Yogi Co. on Instagram as well. So yeah, feel free to follow me, connect with me, and I'd be happy to guide you and connect with you.
And buy your book, A Miner Who Wins Inner Peace.
That's correct. And you can buy the book on Kindle as well. And on the website as well. The hard copies on the website. So I'm really happy to be here, and really grateful for both of you for inviting me on your beautiful podcast. It's going to grow ever. It's going to be just ever growing. And it's going to connect so many people that need to hear this in the world. And yeah, let's make it happen.
Thank you. That was wonderful. I really enjoyed that.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Namaste.
Namaste. Yes, namaste.
You can find us at anantawellbeing.com and follow us at Ananta Wellbeing on Facebook and Instagram. If you like our podcast, please give us a 5-star review to help other like-minded people find us.
This podcast is for information purposes only. Statements and views expressed in this podcast are not medical advice and is not intended to treat or diagnose any medical condition. This podcast and its producers disclaim any responsibility for adverse effects that result from the use of this information. Opinions of guests are their own and are not endorsed by this podcast. No guarantee is given regarding the accuracy of any statements or opinions. We do not make any representation or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. Both producers and guests may have direct or indirect interest in the products and services mentioned. If you think you have a medical condition, please consult a licensed physician.